It is my pleasure to welcome all of you today to this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Justice Ming Chin, past president of the Commonwealth Club. My day job is an associate justice of the California Supreme Court. I would first like to extend a warm welcome to Silicon Valley, to the chief executive of Hong Kong, the Honorable Tung Chi Hwa. 2 months ago, I was invited by Mr. Tung and the Hong Kong government to visit his beautiful and vibrant and exciting city. I saw firsthand the successful beginning of Mr. Tung's vision, one government, two systems. I look forward to hearing the chief executive's vision of the important part that high tech will play in the future of Hong Kong. For those of you who may be unfamiliar with the Commonwealth Club of California, it is the nation's oldest and largest public affairs forum. We have over 15,000 members. Those of you who are not members are welcome to join. Today's program is being recorded for later broadcast over the National Public Radio. We have hundreds of events throughout the year. Here is just a small sample. On Wednesday, August 25th, the Commonwealth Club presents U.S. Secretary of Energy Richard Riley. That will be here at the Fairmont at noon. On Thursday, August 26th, we will hear from Senator and Republican presidential nominee John McCain. That will be at the Wyndham Hotel here in San Jose. Finally, U.S. Representative Tom Campbell will discuss beyond Kosovo issues of U.S. constitutional and international law regarding foreign policy. That will be on Wednesday, September 1st at Ricky's Hyatt House in Palo Alto. And now, it is my pleasure to introduce Mrs. Pauline Lowe Alker, who will introduce our guest speaker. Mrs. Alker is Chairman, CEO, and President of Amplify Net, a startup company here in the Silicon Valley specializing in broadband access-enabling solutions. Recently, at the urging of Mr. Tung and the High-Tech Advisory Board in Hong Kong, Mrs. Alker is currently leading the formation of HongKongSV.com, a nonprofit professional organization here in the Silicon Valley. That organization is to promote awareness of high-tech development activities and business opportunities in the Silicon Valley and in Hong Kong for the advancement of both communities, and to stimulate and facilitate business collaboration and networking opportunities between Hong Kong and the Silicon Valley. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mrs. Pauline Lowe Alker.
Thank you, Judge. I'll behave myself. Before I start, I'd like to first introduce several very successful business tycoons from Hong Kong, I guess you may call them Taipans, who have traveled a long way specifically to be with us today. Now, when I introduce them, I would like them to stand up and recognize so that you can all see who they are. First, Mr. Henry Tang, Chairman of the Federation of Hong Kong Industries, and a member of the Executive Council in Hong Kong. Mr. Payson Cha, Managing Director of the Ming Li Corporation Limited. Mr. Raymond Kwok, Vice Chairman and Managing Director of Sun Hung Kai Properties Group. Mr. Robert Ng, Chairman of the Sino Group. And last but not least, Mr. Stephen Ng, Deputy Chairman and Managing Director of the Wharf Holdings Limited. Welcome to Silicon Valley. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Today, I have the distinct honor of introducing our distinguished host of this luncheon, the Honorable Mr. Tung Chee Hwa, Chief Executive of Hong Kong, who is making his first official visit to Silicon Valley since assuming leadership of Hong Kong in 1997. Now, it's very difficult to portray a multi-dimensional persona with highly distinguished credentials like Mr. Tung without sounding pedestrian and incomplete. But be it as it may, let me just share with you a few highlights in Mr. Tung's illustrious career. Mr. Tung was born in Shanghai, but moved to Hong Kong with his family in 1947. After finishing high school, Mr. Tung went to the UK and got his Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Liverpool. His degree, not surprisingly, was in marine engineering. And why not? After all, Mr. Tung came from a family of very successful shipping business. After graduation, he worked for 10 years or so at General Electric in the U.S., before returning to Hong Kong in 1969 to help his father manage the family's group business, one of the world's largest container and tanker operations in the world. In 1996, after having served many years in various government and industry policy-making councils in Hong Kong and in China, Mr. Tung stood for election as the first chief executive of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region of China and was elected by a wide margin in December that year. Shortly after assuming the leadership of Hong Kong, Mr. Tung personally set forth a bold vision to transform Hong Kong from its traditional financial, transportation, and real estate-based economy to one that is knowledge-driven and high-technology-intensive. Mr. Tung shrewdly recognizes that, in order to fulfill this mission, it is of utmost importance to forge tight relationship and collaboration between the high-tech communities in Hong Kong and in Silicon Valley. After all, Silicon Valley is the high-tech center of the world. Mr. Tung is no stranger to Silicon Valley. He was a member of the Advisory Council at the Institute for International Studies at Stanford University and was on the board of overseers at the Hoover Institute in Stanford. Now, needless to say, Mr. Tung's vision to drastically change a region's economic infrastructure would most certainly face quite a bit of initial public skepticism. However, turning controversial situations around is nothing new to Mr. Tung. In the 1980s, the shipping industry went into a deep global recession. Through hard work, tenacity, and ingenious financial restructuring, Mr. Tung managed to revitalize his family's shipping business and reestablish it firmly today at the forefront of the industry. If you were a betting person, which I know many of us in this room are, would you bet against him? I wouldn't. After all, Mr. Tung is extremely well-versed in global politics and economic matters after having served as chairman of the Hong Kong-U.S. Economic Cooperation Committee and as an international counselor at the Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. To many Hong Kong expats who have worked and lived in Silicon Valley for many years, like myself, the call has now come forth from Mr. Tung for us to step forward and be counted, to do our part to help promote the collaboration between Hong Kong and Silicon Valley for the advancement of both communities, Today, we are very honored to have Mr. Tong here in person to tell us more about his vision. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming our distinguished host, the Honorable Mr. Tong Chi Hwa.
Mayor Gonzalez, Justice Min Chin, Mr. Lee, Mrs. Pauline Low Elker, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for those very kind remarks. I did start working as a young man in 1960 with General Electric Company in Lynn, Massachusetts, and that was 4 years before you did, Pauline. You also worked with General Electric Company. But I must tell you a story about General Electric Company, which, of course, is really, and despite all the success in Silicon Valley, still is one of the most successful companies in America or around the world. The chief executive of General Electric Company is by the name of Jeb Welch. He visited me recently. We compared notes. He said, "CH, I noticed you joined General Electric Company in 1960. I said, "Yes." He said, "I also started with General Electric Company in 1960. So I said, "Oh." I said, "Jack, I think I'd rather be like you. I'd rather be you because, you know, to be the head of a General Electric Company is marvelous." And he said, "What's the matter with you? You don't like your job? I'd rather be you." The truth is that you know, people start in different, people may start together, but we all go different ways, and we really somewhat sometimes end up in different place altogether. But I have now been here a couple of days, and the experience in Silicon Valley is really quite something. You know, in Hong Kong, we are all very proud of what we have achieved. We on the financial market, we have the second largest financial market capitalization in Asia, next to Japan, next to Tokyo. And we have some of the wealthiest people in Asia or around the world, some sitting in this room, who have made good in Hong Kong. You know, we're all very proud of what wealth we have created for our 6.5 million people. But having come to, having been to Silicon Valley, as Payson was correctly saying this morning, we all feel humbled by what's happening here, that in Hong Kong, a $1 billion company is a very successful company. And in the Silicon Valley, $1 billion company may be a startup company. I think you know, what you have done is marvelous. You have created so much wealth for your people. You have made such a wonderful city, Mr. Mayor, for your citizens. My second experience is that there is a lot to learn for us in Hong Kong from you in the Silicon Valley. But I'm even more determined that we should move in this direction. We should follow your footsteps. And I would hope that a few years down the road, it wouldn't be an easy, a quick fix, but a few years down the road, we will be able to proudly say, look, we are like Silicon Valley in Asia, working well. We hope we will be able to achieve a fraction of your success a few years down the road. It is a great pleasure for me to be speaking to you today. It should have been May earlier on this year, because of events in Hong Kong, I had to make a last-minute cancellation of the trip. So I'd like to begin my speech with an apology for not having kept the May timetable, but I'm absolutely delighted to be back here today. You know, this whole Bay Area and the Silicon Valley is a favorite place for me and for my wife. Before I took up the responsibility as chief executive, we used to come here 8 times a year for me to do some business, to enjoy some good food, to see some beautiful sceneries, and to visit many old friends here. But since I have become the chief executive, this is my first trip to this area. I'm really very happy to be back here. It's, for me, it's like a home away from home. You might or you might not know that I'm a great 49ers fan.
And, right team. And
I think it's about time they win back the Super Bowl. No, this is really home away from home. Mr. Mayor, I was just going to say, to tell you, unfortunately, I don't understand ice hockey, so I can't say very much about the San Jose Sharks. But this area is not only special for me, it is also very special for Chinese people in America. It was back in the late 1840s, the first Chinese started to arrive in California. Today, around 2 million people of Chinese descent have made their home in America. It is estimated about half, 1 million, about 50%, live in California, and mostly in the Silicon Valley Bay Area or in the Los Angeles area. There's also a significant presence of former Hong Kong residents. In the 10 years to the end of 1998, more than 100,000 Hong Kong people were granted immigration visa to the United States, while over 17,000 student visas were granted in the 3 years to the end of 1998. On the other side of the Pacific, America has a long established and very prominent presence in Hong Kong, where more than 40,000 citizens, U.S. citizens, live and work. For corporate America, Hong Kong is an important base for the Asia-Pacific region. More than 190 United States companies have regional quarters in Hong Kong, while another 285 have regional offices. The American Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong is extremely active. It is the biggest AmCham outside of America and represents the business interest of more than 1,000 companies with 2,600 members. The American Club, the Hong Kong International School, which offers American curriculum, are both in great demand. July 4th, Halloween, Thanksgiving, live telecast of NBA or NFL, playoff games, are all part and parcel of Hong Kong's calendar of events. The Asian Wall Street Journal, the USA Today, Newsweek, the International Herald Tribune are all published in Hong Kong. So I suppose you can say Hong Kong is home away from home for many Americans. Recreation and leisure aside, one prominent feature which California and Hong Kong share is the emphasis on business and commerce. The primary purpose of my visit this time is to tap into the experience of Silicon Valley, which is leading the world's advances in information technology and in high-tech industries. I'm told that the market capitalization of the top 6 or 7 IT firms in the world exceeds the value of the gold which mankind has ever mined in history. As Hong Kong embarks on a journey to upgrade its economy into the realms of high-tech world, Silicon Valley offers us the best starting point. Busy as I am in Hong Kong, I try to meet as many of you from the Silicon Valley as possible. Silicon Valley is one of those places which we hear a lot about. We want to know why you have been successful, what makes you tick. During my brief visit this morning, it is hard not to feel inspired by the sheer magnitude of the creative energy which has made this place the heartland of high tech and some of what may call the cradle of American innovation. And that is the main reason my colleagues and I are here today, to look, to listen, and to learn. Another is to let you know what we have been doing in Hong Kong to try to emulate some of your success. We have our own vision. That is to make Hong Kong the hub of innovation and technology in Asia, and particularly for China. The American philosopher Eric Hoffer once said that the only way to predict the future is to have the power to shape it. The policies and programs we are now vigorously pursuing, and I stress the word vigorously, will help shape a better future for us all in Hong Kong. I have always believed that innovation and technology are the crucial drivers of economic growth and expansion. This is particularly so in the knowledge-based global economy in which we now live. Innovation and technology are the principal means to improve efficiency and productivity, add value, and enhance our overall competitiveness. In short, innovation and technology are the blueprint for building our future. And my visit to the Silicon Valley today has reaffirmed my conviction that we should develop long-term policies to promote the development of a technology-based and high-value-added economic sector in Hong Kong. This is particularly important while we continue the economic adjustment process brought about by the Asian financial crisis of the past 2 years. I believe that the government has an important role to play in creating the right environment for innovation and technology to develop and to flourish. And this is what we are doing now. However, the ultimate success of our endeavor to facilitate, encourage, and nurture our IT sector and export homegrown technology will depend largely on private sector involvement and the determination and the courage of young entrepreneurs to turn good ideas into popular, commercially viable products. I'm sure many in Silicon Valley knows exactly what I mean. Last year, I established a commission on innovation and technology, which was chaired by one of America's outstanding scientists and educators, Professor C.L. Tin from UC Berkeley. The commission earlier this month handed me the final report and has made a number of recommendations to help Hong Kong position itself as a leader in the development of information technology, especially in e-commerce and software engineering. In this regard, I have accepted the key recommendation from the Commission on Innovation and Technology to strengthen the capability of our private sector to develop innovative ideas for commercial use. I have also endorsed Professor Ting's recommendation to step up our efforts to attract the best talents to Hong Kong. In today's knowledge-based world, intellectual capital is as important as financial capital as an economic driver. Let me elaborate on some of these areas. First, we will establish an Applied Science and Technology Research Institute, which will bridge the gap between the academics and the entrepreneurs by conducting application-driven and market-oriented research and development work for transfer to industry. In other words, turning bright ideas into even brighter, deeper bank accounts. Secondly, we will set up an innovation and technology fund of 5 billion Hong Kong dollars, or the equivalent of 640 million US dollars, to finance projects which will contribute to innovation and technology upgrading of our manufacturing and service industries. These may include commercially relevant R&D projects, activities to promote technology diffusion, sourcing and acquisition, and those which would enhance technological entrepreneurship. One area in which Hong Kong can excel is to develop as a center for Chinese medicine, focusing on the standardization, commercialization, and internationalization of the traditional Chinese medicine, which has a history of thousands of years. Thirdly, we have set up a special task force to critically review our immigration policy to facilitate an inflow of talents. In particular, the task force is considering ways in which we can draw on the deep and rich reservoir of scientists and highly skilled technologists from the mainland of China. We will also embark on overseas missions to major technology centers, such as the Silicon Valley, to highlight the opportunities available in Hong Kong. The mainland is not just in Hong Kong, but also the mainland and, in fact, the entire Asian region. Another purpose of this mission would be to persuade young talents or technological entrepreneurs who can see a future for themselves and their ideas in Asia. And by Asia, I mean based in Hong Kong. We already have a dynamic IT sector in Hong Kong, well on its way into becoming a significant cluster of creative energy. Our efforts will be directed towards building up a critical mass of talented IT professionals in the shortest possible time. Fourthly, we will make sure we have the proper coordination, leadership, and advisory structures within the government to carry forward the Commission's major recommendations, as well as to complement and support the effort of the private sector. Professor Ting has left us with a valuable blueprint for providing the sharpest possible technological cutting edge which we can apply to both our industrial and IT services processes. Professor Ting was recently appointed by President Clinton to the U.S. National Science Board, which unfortunately means he may no longer have the time to help us take forward his proposal. I guess our loss is your gain. To develop Hong Kong into a center for innovation and technology, the single most crucial ingredient is, of course, human capital. In this regard, we will continue to invest heavily in education. It takes up about 20% of our annual budget at $44 billion or $5.6 billion. Education is our single biggest item of recurring expenditure in the current financial year, as it was in the last financial year and the year before. And I believe it will continue to be in the years ahead. In November this year, we released a five-year strategy on IT in education, which will significantly boost the availability and the use of IT in teaching and in learning. We are also building a science park to develop more high-tech, high-value-added industries. The 54-acre project will provide accommodation for research and development activities of technology-based firms. Significantly, it is expected to house the Applied Science and Technology Research Institute. Its first phase is due to open in the second half of 2001. The policies and initiatives I have just described will redefine Hong Kong's comparative advantages and sharpen our competitive edge. The government is also doing its part in promoting the development of e-commerce by implementing an electronic service delivery scheme, or ESD as we call it. This project will allow the government to deliver around-the-clock online services to the public at home via the internet or other electronic means. The first phase to be launched in the later half of next year will offer services from 10 government departments. One service will be the payment of tax bills. although I'm not sure how popular that service will go down. An integral part of ESD is the development of a safe and secure system through which to conduct e-commerce via a common open interface. This involves the establishment of a local public key infrastructure and a public certification authority. We expect the public certification service will be available to business and individuals by the end of this year. We shall also develop a clear legal framework to enhance certainty in the conduct of electronic transactions. All of these initiatives, we hope, will prime the development of e-commerce in Hong Kong. In the long run, we aim to include all public services amenable to electronic mode of delivery under the ESD scheme. In addition, we are developing a common Chinese language interface to facilitate electronic transaction and information exchange for those who want to use Chinese. Our excellent telecommunication infrastructure, our bilingual language capabilities, and our unique position as a special administrative region of China give us an unparalleled advantage to serve as an information gateway to the mainland and to develop a role as an internet traffic and content web for the Asia-Pacific region. I'll give you an example. One pioneering Chinese language project has recently come to fruition after more than 3 years of work. It brought together the entrepreneurial flair of a Hong Kong publisher and the talents of more than 400 IT professionals, editors, and academics from Hong Kong, Beijing, and Shanghai. The result of all their work is the digital version of the classic Chinese literary masterpiece, Si Ke Quan Shu, which is the single largest collection of literary work in the world. It is actually an encyclopedia covering 5,000 years of Chinese civilization. To give you an idea of the size of the project, Si Ke Quan Shu contains some 800 million characters in 36,000 volumes. The project has been made extensive use of high-speed scanning, graphics handling, and optic character recognition technologies to cope efficiently and accurately with the large-scale inputting of Chinese characters. As a result, those works are now available on a set of 175 CD-ROMs, which contains 4.7 million pages of scanned original scripts. This was also the world's first large-scale project to use the International Coding Standard, ISO 10646, to create a database for Chinese contents. This is the same coding standard that the Hong Kong government is using and promoting as its common Chinese language interface and in the development of Chinese language application. A sophisticated system of indexing and searching tools was also developed and installed in the electronic version of Si Ke Quan Shu. These tools has greatly facilitated the study of classical Chinese texts. And I think of many other useful applications. For example, the compilation of digital reference, a vast pool of literature on Chinese medicine. In addition to the above initiatives, we are embarking on an exciting project that will put us in a strategic position to develop information technology and services. We called it the Cyberport. This 62-acre, $1.3 billion project is situated on the waterfront site on the western shores of Hong Kong Island and is a private sector-led initiative with infrastructure support provided by the government. It will offer the best working and living environment and facilities for leading-edge information technology and service companies. In addition to top international names in the IT and service field, Cyberport will also cater to smaller local companies. They will benefit from shared facilities such as broadband telecommunication backbone, multimedia laboratories, a cyber library, and linkage with universities and research institutions. By establishing a good cluster of IT and service companies at the Cyberport, we will also create an environment conducive to the exchange of ideas and interaction between all those at the facility, the sort of environment on which Silicon Valley has thrived and fortunes has been made. I'm confident we will see a good mix of international companies taking advantage of the facilities at Cyberport and the opportunities it presents for cyber business in Asia and on the mainland. 12 international companies have already signed up as anchor tenants, including Hewlett-Packard, Intel, Oracle, Yahoo, IBM, SoftBank, and Zhongchen, also Sybase. Another 50 companies have registered their interest in becoming tenants. I hope more will join them later. The Cyberport will also greatly strengthen Hong Kong's appeal to venture capitalists. While our venture capital industry is the largest in Asia in terms of capital under management, funds predominantly originate outside Hong Kong and are dispersed outside Hong Kong. As IT application and internet companies take root and flourish in the nurturing environment of Cyberport, the need for young internet and internet-related companies for venture capital will naturally grow. Not far from the Cyberport, on the south side of Hong Kong Island, we are building a world-class teleport, which will come online next year. This will give external facility providers and broadcasters plenty of capacity for satellite links to and from Hong Kong. Given that the digital world makes no distinction between telephones, TVs, or PCs, it is expected that the teleport and cyberport projects will form a strategic communication corridor. This is in itself will create synergy to develop new media type and applications. One of the world's most open and liberal telecommunication sector is also helping Hong Kong realize another goal to become Asia's leading internet traffic and content hub. Excellent telecommunication infrastructure and the presence of the more than 130 internet service providers have placed Hong Kong in an ideal position to act as a premier information gateway into the relatively untapped and potentially huge market in mainland China. The online market in China, for instance, represents a potentially huge opportunity for cyberport-based companies. Encouraging the development of innovative and attractive bilingual internet sites locally, perhaps through some of the cyberport tenants, will add impetus to the push, especially in terms of e-commerce opportunities in the mainland routed through Hong Kong servers or accessed via Hong Kong sites. We believe that content and language differentiation will be among the largest technical distribution and marketing challenges facing service providers, portal operators, and their investors. This is an area where Hong Kong can excel and lead as it has in the past. If recent indications are anything to go by, the private sector, as I mentioned before, they will be the ultimate arbiter of whether our high-tech drive is a success, is wasting no time in seizing upcoming opportunities in Hong Kong and mainland of China and beyond. For example, Intel has joined forces with Hong Kong's Pacific Century Group to develop an interactive internet TV service delivered by cable and satellite. Microsoft and Cable and Wireless Hong Kong Telecom are developing an interactive internet TV service to be delivered via cable. Telecom has already introduced the world's first commercial-scale interactive TV service, while Microsoft Hong Kong provided technical support for our interactive government service directory. Yahoo, which I visited this morning, has teamed up with Hong Kong's third largest mobile phone operator, Smartone, to expand its internet presence, especially in Greater China. This is indeed a huge potential for collaboration. There is indeed a huge potential for collaboration on all manners of and all types of projects with partners in China. According to data provided by International Data Corporation, China IT market growing at the annual rate, compounded rate of close to 30% between 1998 and the year of 2003, will become one of the largest in Asia. And indeed, the same data showed by 2005, it is projected China will become the second most wired country in the world next to the United States. We have unparalleled access to an understanding of the massive market on our doorstep, the mainland of China. We will serve as the best stepping stone to that vast potential market of over 1.2 billion people. We are developing closer links with the mainland universities, and we are putting together a digital database of all the mainland technological resources. In order to ensure success in building our knowledge-based economy, we as a government have reaffirmed our determination and commitment. Firstly, we are committed to improve our IT infrastructure, lending our support to projects like the Cyberport. Secondly, we are developing an efficient telecommunication network as we progressively liberalize our telecommunication sector. By replacing telecommunication monopoly with open competition, we have managed to reduce charges, promote usage, and stimulate innovation in telecommunication and internet services. To date, the majority of households in Hong Kong are connected to optic fiber network, and our internet penetration rate is almost 15%, one of the highest in the region. Thirdly, we are committed to put in place internet-friendly policies to foster a high-tech culture in the community. We firmly believe that having a knowledge base and information economy will benefit the entire society, as it will make all companies and every one of our citizens more competitive. These are some of the initiatives we are taking, but they are not simply standalones. Rather, they form part of a strategic long-term vision to complement and enhance our traditional strengths in financial services, banking, communication, tourism, and transport. They will add a new dimension to our economic base and, in the long run, boost our competitiveness and attractiveness as an international business center. And they will be carried forward within the fundamental framework that has served Hong Kong so well over the past 3 to 4 decades. The rule of law upheld by an independent judiciary, a level playing field, and a clean administration, low, predictable tax rates, and legendary commitment to free trade and open market. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know that we are absolutely committed to protecting intellectual property rights through a world-class intellectual property rights regime. Our approach has been to maintain a comprehensive legal framework, to take vigorous and sustained enforcement action, to step up education and publicity, and to create strong links with cross-boundary and international enforcement authorities, as well as relevant industries. We recognize that much more needs to be done, and we are determined to do more to ensure that we have one of the best intellectual property rights regime in the world. We have devoted extra resources to combat the theft of intellectual property and are making special effort to intensify our public education programs in this area. We simply will not tolerate the theft of ideas. We have urged everyone in Hong Kong to support our effort by refusing to buy pirated or counterfeit goods of any description. We have a cosmopolitan and outward-looking community, the world's most externally oriented economy, a free and vibrant media, and an unfettered flow of information, news, views, ideas, and money, which give us advantage that few, if any, can match in Asia. Excellent communication and transport infrastructure, easy access, and a strategic location in the heart of Asia between the time zones of North America and Europe have all helped Hong Kong stamp its mark on the world stage. We have a well-educated and flexible workforce, a quick uptake of new ideas and new technology, and world-class universities, including the world's first authorized academic Java campus at the Hong Kong University. Hong Kong today is one of the world's freest and most open economies. We are a major international, financial, trading, communication, and transport center. All of this has been achieved because of the drive and determination of our people, their hard work, and their very entrepreneurial spirit. As an international city, we are also putting a sharper focus on quality of life issues. We understand that our role as an international and cosmopolitan community relies on attracting and retaining the best international and cosmopolitan talents from all around the globe. And to do that, we need to offer a lifestyle that promises not just commercial stimulation and ample reward for hard work and enterprise, but a pleasant and enjoyable living environment as well. In addition, we also owe it to our 6.5 million residents to provide them with a decent environment in which to live, work, and enjoy life. Much has been done in this regard, but we know much more needs to be done. To this end, we will spare no effort to tackle the full range of environmental issues, including air and water quality and waste disposals. All of this underpins our determination to develop a leading role within Asia as a center of excellence for innovation and technology. We are determined to move forward with our vision for the 21st century Hong Kong, playing an active, meaningful, and leading role in the fully wired world in the not-too-distant future. And if anyone here is looking for a stepping stone into the Asian and Chinese market, then all you need to do is key in the magic word, H-O-N-G-K-O-N-G, Hong Kong. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Executive, Honorable Tong Qihua. I have the most enviable job to give you the Q&A. And now I understand how the Legislative Council feel. So let me, you want an easy one or the hard one first? All right, let's start with the easy one, so make it lighter. The easy one is, will we have a Disneyland in Hong Kong?
I like to tell you a whole lot of it, whole lot about Disneyland, but as negotiations are ongoing and there are commercially sensitive discussions, so there's very little I can say. But I'm very hopeful that in a few years' time I will be able to take my grandchildren to visit Mickey Mouse in Hong Kong. Thank you.
Okay. Please stay there. I have three questions that relates to the stability of the Hong Kong dollars, as well as the the potential devaluation of the yuan in the next near future, and if that happened, what will happen to the Hong Kong dollars, and how does that impact the Hong Kong economy?
Let me say this. China's economy is moving ahead well. The first quarter growth was more than 8%. It has a foreign exchange reserve of 147 billion US dollars, the second highest in the world. Last year's direct foreign investment into China was over 40 billion US dollars, and the foreign export surpluses was close to $40 billion. I don't have the current figure for this year yet, but I imagine that China will continue, despite the competitive environment in Asia, continue to enjoy a sizable trade surplus, as well as substantial foreign direct investment. China's total budget deficit as a percent of GDP is much below 2%, and it has very prudent financial management. And if it is in Europe, it will qualify under the Maastricht Treaty and become member of this group of 13. So given that set of numbers, I just cannot imagine the yuan will be devalued. These are the fundamental figures. So I'm afraid that the yuan will not be devalued. So I'm afraid I can't answer this hypothetical question. Insofar as Hong Kong is concerned, we have gone through a very difficult time in Hong Kong. As a result of the Asian financial turmoil, our economy contracted more than 5% last year. Unemployment from a low of 2% was as high as 6.1% at the last quarter. It's been a difficult period for us, but I'm glad to see the latest set of figures showing that things are stabilizing. Our financial market is now calm. Our property market, having fallen off very substantially, have now stabilized. And we are all looking forward to a slow but a sure recovery, perhaps later on in the year. The linked exchange rate, linking US dollar with Hong Kong dollar, is a policy which we will not change. This is a very important government policy that will not be changed. And I just want you to know that we operate under what is called a currency board system, and it's different from some of the other countries who just link their currency with some other currency. What we do is that for those banks which issue notes in Hong Kong, Hong Kong dollar notes, and there are three commercial banks which issue notes in Hong Kong. For every $7.80 of notes they issue, they deposit with the Hong Kong government $1. So if you bring back to the Hong Kong government $7.80 Hong Kong, I will give you back $1. And today, the foreign exchange reserve that government holds at some $88 billion covers the currency in circulation, not one time, not two times, not three times. I think it covers it eight times. So again, I'm afraid the devaluation of Hong Kong dollar is really a hypothetical question, which I don't want to answer.
Okay, next question. First of all, I'd like everybody to know that I must have gotten 60, 70 questions. I thought it was an easy job. It was one of the most toughest jobs. And in a limited span of time, I have chosen to collapse a lot of questions. Earlier, when I was chatting with CH, he said I could ask any questions that he will give an open answer. So CH, in that spirit, if you like the questions, this is obviously my brilliant choice of the question. If you don't like the question, I think it belongs to table 52 or something. Dear Honorable Tong, how do you like the One Nation, Two Systems in Hong Kong so far? What is your opinion to Mr. Lee's in Taiwan about the separation of China? Do you think a good Hong Kong will serve as a good example that the reunion of Taiwan is going to be in the near future? It is my brilliance.
And I thought Zhang Chen was my good friend. One country, two system is really working very well in Hong Kong. One country, two system is not just a slogan. It is institutionalized by an act of law by the National People's Congress of China. It's called the Basic Law, which applies to Hong Kong. The Basic Law guarantees our way of life. It provides for independent judiciary, separate monetary systems. It provides for independent custom territory. And it provides a whole lot of things, freedom of speech, assembly, and information and movement. And it's a piece of document which was promulgated by National People's Congress of China after 4 years of discussion between people from Hong Kong and people on the mainland. And in the 2 years since July 1, 1997, we have been moving forward under one country, two system. It's really going very well. The leadership, the Chinese leadership, are very, very determined to make one country, two system work. It's good for Hong Kong. It's good for China as a whole. And as I said time and again, that it will be a good example. And I would hope it will help, if we are successful, it will help towards the ultimate reunification of the country. So, yes, it is working well. And for those of you who have been to Hong Kong recently, I'm sure you will agree with me. Having been there a week or so, you hear all the noises and the demonstrations, and you will see all the funny cartoons of me in the newspaper. And all the criticisms and the abuse I myself and some of my colleagues have to face in the newspaper every day. For those who have not been to Hong Kong yet, we really invite you to come and see for yourself how well we have done. Insofar as Taiwan is concerned, I think the One China policy, One China principle, is the very basis, the very foundation of the informal discussions that's been going on between the central government and between Taiwan authorities. So that is the basis of all these discussions. And in fact, One China principle is very much accepted internationally, also accepted by people all around the world, Chinese people. So I would hope and I would expect that the discussion will eventually go forward on this basis. And to the extent people ask me, what is my role in all this? Well, my role in all this is to make Hong Kong successful, to make sure one country, two systems successful. Thank you very much.
Okay. In the interest of time, unfortunately, I have to apologize. This is the last questions. The questions categorically have to do with the attracting talents and the easing of immigrations back into Hong Kong to promote the innovative and technology knowledge-based economy. So what is the policy changes that will be put in place to affect that?
I can't be specific at this moment yet because the task force is now studying and in fact putting the final touches onto what we are going to do. But I would like to emphasize is that number one is that the regime will be liberal, and number two is that the response will be fast and sensitive, and number three is that there will not be upper limits as to how many would be able to come, and number four is that it will be the responsibility of the private sector to really sponsor people to come to Hong Kong. And I think it's based on these principles we are now putting on the final touches onto this plan, and I would hope that it would not be too long before we will be able to make it public.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tong Chi-Hua, and thank you very much for everybody who joined us here in FAM1 today. The meeting is now closed.
I'm sorry the speech was longer than it should be. It contained a lot of propaganda stuff. But what I did want to say also is that I'm delighted that there is now this Hong Kong SiliconValley.com organization, which Pauline is leading, John Chen, and a few others who's been very helpful. It is an important organization to Hong Kong. It will provide a bridge between Hong Kong and Silicon Valley. And I would hope that Pauline, you and John and your colleagues, we really help Hong Kong and Silicon Valley to work very closely together. I look to Silicon Valley not from a point of view being competitive, because we can't be. You are the very big brother, and we're just beginning. We're just at kindergarten level. So we hope you come and help us. Thank you very much.